It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Talk. All right, Sue, I mentioned this earlier. By the way, Josh Hammer is coming up here in a few minutes. We're going to get him on the line. We'll talk a little bit, reflect on the last year. He's written quite a bit about the attack 1 year ago today. And he's got a new book out that relates to Israel as well, or at least it's coming out. So Josh is going to join us, Ilya Shapiro as well. A couple of things to settle with you. I alluded to this in the last hour. So went to this volleyball game yesterday on my way back on Manchester Road. I saw, I can't remember the name of this place. It's right over by where that Culver's is in the BMW dealership, not too far from Holloway.
West County BMW as you approach 141.
Yeah, right there. But there's a place, and shamefully, I've never been in there because they had a lot of food and they had fresh vegetables, but they also had pumpkins and gourds and stuff like that. So picked up a couple of pumpkins yesterday for the front of the house.
That's
and I
nice.
I got two mums, okay?
Okay.
Didn't seem like enough. So went to, you know where Stuckmeyer's is?
Yeah.
That's right by the Pink Elephant off of 141 in Jeffco. That I used to live over closer to there.
Oh, okay.
Stuckmeyer's is awesome. And if you go...
I've never been in there.
Well, it's great. They have a little market with fresh vegetables.
Well,
they have
nice.
A ton of pumpkins and, you know, corn maize this time of year. A lot of the kids go over there. Like today, there was nobody there because it was a Monday. Although kids have it off school, so they probably had quite a few. But they had this deal, all right? So I bought two yesterday. It was $9.99 per mum, all kinds of great
that's
colors.
That's a good deal.
But listen to this. Or it was $6.99 if you buy six.
So you bought six.
I bought six.
What are you
so now I have eight mums. I have no idea. What we usually do, let me tell you what usually happens.
Okay.
Now my daughter is, can she hear me if she got her stupid headphones
no,
on?
No, she's got her headphones on.
Alexa, pay attention here. Can I ask you a question? Can you come on the air real quick? When you were with me when we bought the mums, right?
Yes.
Right. So typically when we buy, this is not the first time, typically when mommy buys mums, what happens to them at the house?
They die.
Yeah, thank you. That's all. You're done. You can go back to your iPad because we...
Does anybody water
the
mums?
Well, that's the... So here's the deal.
Do we replant or we just leave them in the plastic?
So this is why I'm taking control of the mum situation.
I see.
Because... I've been on this mission to grow grass in my backyard, and I did a little bit more yesterday because I have about five or six bare spots. Most of them have filled in, right?
Yeah.
I've got a few more I want to get really, really picky, and now I'm watering the grass every day again,
That's
right?
good.
Yes, it is good. But I'm going to water the mums. So I've taken it upon myself. I've got eight mums. We're going to see.
Good.
You can track this throughout the month of, maybe we should get a little mum indicator up on the Twitter or something like that to show if they're dead. But invariably, we do forget to water them and then they die.
Yeah, well, that's what
but
happens.
But they look beautiful. I got the red, the pink, the purple,
the
white. We got a couple of whites.
Nice. Do you just have them on the porch in any kind of arrangement?
Well, that's where I need some help because right now they're kind of loaded up in front of my house. And if anyone is listening that's on my block, if you go by, you could probably grab a couple and I wouldn't even know the difference at this point. But I do need a little help. Like, this is where
Ranging.
It gets a little scary. I'm afraid if I do this, I'm going to get the man card taken away. I might Google, like, how do you arrange
mums in front of a house?
No, I think
that's
fine.
You need a little height, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have some in the back and some people.
I've got some on the deck. I'm going to put a couple in the back on the deck.
Good. That'll work.
I'm getting in touch with my feminine side,
Sue. I like it. You're metrosexualing the whole thing.
Exactly. There was something else, though. Oh, this is it. And this is big for you and I, Sue.
Okay.
And for my friend Carlin Yeager, who's in mid-Missouri, because he's got one of your communist phones as well. But we've known that this is coming. This is a Wall Street Journal article from yesterday. No more blurry images. Your texts are getting an upgrade. It says RCS lets you read receipts, typing indicators, and high-resolution images. And this has to do with the texting between iPhones and Androids. And the best way that I can explain it is if I'm at my house... I have Wi-Fi at my house. I don't have a cell signal.
Yeah.
I have to have Wi-Fi. I have to have Wi-Fi calling. There's an area like right in the kitchen where I might be able to get a text out. But if I'm at home on any given night, like tonight, watching the Chiefs game, Oreo, my bunny, does something cute, and I want to send that to Sue with her communist phone, it will not allow me to send a picture when I'm on Wi-Fi. Now, if I tried to do that right here with my iPad, I'm not on Wi-Fi, it would be fine.
Why?
It's just this communication issue.
I think they do that on purpose.
I think they do, too.
Yes.
And now they're doing this on purpose. So, the iOS 18 software update, and I have not done this yet, but it supports Rich Communication Services, RCS, the first major change to texting since SMS in 1992.
Are you kidding me?
So that's kind of significant. It says it brings some familiar Blue Bubble iMessage features to Green Bubble chats with Android phones, such as emoji reactions and read receipts.
Nice.
And one of the things that they talk about here is most Americans have iPhones. Some people, like you, have communist phones. And it's a big reason that we stick with Apple's devices. But they talk about how you have low-resolution images with Android iPhone chats, broken group chats.
Yep.
This is something that happens.
That's
so
right.
I'm in a big group chat with some of the people that I hunt with and even family members, and sometimes you'll send a message. It'll say that it's not received because I think the Android person doesn't get it, but everyone else does.
Yep, it's really annoying.
It gets confusing. This is supposed to fix that, right?
Okay, someone just sent me view contact from an iPhone, and I on my Android can't open it. So I could see the person's name, but none of the information. Stuff like that drives you bonkers.
Yeah. Now, look, you'd think that this would be easier. Maybe it's going to be. They make it clear in this Wall Street Journal article that RCS on iPhone is not iMessage for Android. You're still going to see the green bubbles in the chat, but it's better than SMS. It doesn't require having to open a separate app. iPhone users just need to upgrade to iOS 18. You, as an Android device, you just have to flip on a switch. So you might have to look into this a little bit. You have to turn on RCS, and your carrier needs to support it. Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile do, all right? And everyone in the chat must have RCS enabled. I can't tell you how to do that. They say if you're on an iPhone,
go to settings. Wait, is this now already?
If you have iOS 18, yeah.
Okay.
So for me, I go to settings, then apps, and then select messages, and then tap on RCS messaging. For you, open Google Messages, which comes pre-installed.
Yes.
Tap your profile picture, then message settings, select RCS chats. The text input field will say RCS message.
A Google, spam and block, device changing.
Tap your profile
message
picture.
Settings.
Message settings, select RCS chats.
I got it on.
Then you're good.
Okay.
So, well, here's what I'll do. We'll test this over the next couple of days. I will do the new iOS tonight or tomorrow.
Okay.
And then we'll see if this works. Okay.
Okay.
There you go.
Ooh, that's exciting if
that's
it
right.
does.
Ilya Shapiro is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Right now, on a very somber day, Newsweek senior editor-at-large and the host of the Josh Hammer Show. He's also got a new book that's coming out called The Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and Destiny of the West. Josh Hammer back with us this afternoon. Josh, how are you?
Mark, I'm doing as well as I can. I live in Florida, so we've got a hurricane approaching. It's a very solemn anniversary, but despite all the above, it's great to join you as always.
Well, let me start with the hurricane, because obviously these things are kind of happening fast and furious. What are you hearing from your location? This is going to kind of target Tampa, right?
Yeah, so I live in Southeast Florida in the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area. We're broadly speaking going to be fine. I mean, fine is a relative term. I'm sure it'll be a lot of rain, a lot of flooding, but it's looking like Southwest Florida, everywhere from Naples and Fort Myers up towards Tampa Bay, is going to get just absolutely smashed. And you have to recall that those folks are really just beginning to fully recover from Hurricane Helene. So it's really just back-to-back massive storms. It's unfortunate times for folks living on the west coast of Florida.
Yeah, that is a double whammy. And then, you know, in the meantime, I still feel that we're almost 2 weeks out now from Helene, that we still haven't really even scratched the surface in some of this devastation, especially in North Carolina.
I would very much agree with that. I mean, these videos that just continue to surface out of western North Carolina in particular are just astonishing. I mean, we're talking here about helicopter rescues, people just having to be evacuated as if they're being saved from the Taliban in Afghanistan after Biden withdrew. I mean, this is like battlefield-like stuff, and this happened a while ago at this point, as you said, but 230 people dead from Hurricane Helene. I mean, that is an eye-popping number.
It really is.
Most hurricanes these days are not anywhere close to that death toll. these parts of Western North Carolina are going to take years and years and years to recover if they ever do. It's very sad.
Well, let's talk about this anniversary. And let me start with this question, Josh. What are you observing today across the country? You have some of these anti-Semitic protests that have popped up again on college campuses. But here we are a year later. We're still engulfed in a war. You have hostages that have not been released or returned. We don't even know if some of them are alive. But what are your observations just in a broad way on this anniversary, looking at America today?
So I guess my observations fall into two buckets. One is the more personal, and then one is the more geopolitical. So on a more personal level, my wife was born in Israel. She was raised mostly here in America, but most of her family is still back there. And I think back to her brother, my brother-in-law, who lives in a town called Netivot, which is just about 5 miles from the Gaza-Israel border. And if you recall, when this happened, October 7, 2023, it was on the Jewish Sabbath on Saturday, and it was also a holiday. So for multiple reasons, religious Jews were not online. So all that to say that my in-laws here in Florida didn't even know whether their son was alive for essentially 48 hours, if not more than that. So I think back on a personal level to just the stress and the nervousness and how on edge everyone was at that time. On a geopolitical level, I hate to say it, but not only has very little changed over the past year, but I worry that Israel's position is, if anything, even more precarious than it was a year ago, because they're not only fighting a one-front war against Hamas and Gaza right now, they're fighting quite literally a seven-front war at the moment. It's against Hamas and Gaza, various Iran-backed militias in Judea and Samaria, a.k.a. the West Bank. They're fighting Hezbollah in Lebanon. They're fighting Iran-backed militias as well in both Syria and Iraq. The Houthis are in Yemen, also backed by Iran. And then there's the head of the snake, the Iranian regime itself, which just launched those 181 missiles at Israel last Tuesday. So it's a very, very dangerous and volatile time in the Middle East. It's made all the more volatile by the fact that America, you know, we have our election coming up. So there's a lot that is up in the air at the moment. But if there's one thing, Mark, that my reading of history suggests, it's that the Jewish people tend to endure and to survive one way or the other. And God willing, that's what's going to happen this time as well.
So I want you to address, because I think this is a very important point. In the book, you talk about the how this really kind of is linked to the future of Western civilization. And you know, I've spoken about this conflict in these terms as well. And I think, you know, that's even become more apparent here in the last few weeks with Iran taking more involvement with Hezbollah. But explain that. Why is it so much connected to really our way of life to a certain extent?
So in the book, which comes out in March, but it is available for pre-sale now on Amazon and elsewhere, Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. In the book, what I essentially argue is that Western civilization begins at Mount Sinai, that the founding moment of what today we call Western civilization was God's revelation to Moses and the ancient Israelites at Mount Sinai. And I think a lot of young people today don't understand what this concept of the West means. And part of that is the fault of the universities and the educators and those who are responsible for teaching this sort of thing. To me personally, when I use the term the West or Western civilization, I'm really referring to the Judeo-Christian civilization and the biblical inheritance more generally. So some people say it's a combination of revelation and reason, and you add the Greeks and Aristotle and all that. But at a bare minimum, what we all agree is the core of the West is the Judeo-Christian biblical inheritance. And from both that thematic angle as well as the practical on-the-ground reality, it is the Jewish state of Israel that is the front line. It is the civilizational clash between our broader inheritance and the forces of barbarism that seek to subdue it. And as you alluded to, the past few weeks, especially in Lebanon with Hezbollah, show this in striking terms. So just to put some more details on this, in late July, Israel took out a Hezbollah terrorist by the name of Fuad Shakur. He was instrumental in the 1983 Beirut barracks bombings that saw 241 U.S. Marines slaughtered there. The U.S. State Department had a $5 million bounty on his head. Israel took him out. Similarly, a few weeks ago, they got Ibrahim Akil. He also had blood on his hands of Americans back from 1983. He actually had a $7 million bounty. Israel got him as well. Then, of course, they got Hassan Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, for over three decades. So the point is, in the starkest, most undeniable terms one could ever imagine, Israel is quite literally doing the West's dirty work for it. And all it asks, frankly, in return, is that you let it do its thing and try to defend our common inheritance from our mutual enemies, such as the Iranian regime, first and foremost, which literally chants death to America in its streets right after they chant death to Israel. So for all sorts of biblical reasons, but as well as just on the fact reality reasons, the Jewish state really is just the front line of our clash. And ultimately, Mark, in the book, in the final chapter, what I call for is a Jewish-Christian alliance, the two peoples of the book, to come together to defend our broader inheritance from the three hegemonic forces that seek to destroy us, which I personally identify as global neoliberalism, Islamism, and wokeism.
So, you know, as someone who's a non-Jew, I think one of the things that a lot of us have been shocked by, you know, you write about this in the book, you had professors at Ivy League universities that referred to this day a year ago as awesome and exhilarating. And a lot of us have been just shocked at the amount and the level of anti-Semitism in this country, in particular on college campuses. And I think we're seeing some of that, you know, again, rear its ugly head on this anniversary. But I don't even know how you approach that moving forward, because it's been exposed and, you know, it, I guess maybe you in particular and Jewish people knew that it, you know, was there as an underlying current anyway. But the way that it was exposed, I think, is still shocking to a lot of us, Josh.
The way that it came out in the open within hours, within minutes, perhaps, I mean, it does continue to shock the conscience. It really does. I mean, I remember those Ivy League professors saying that. Joseph Massad at Columbia University, Russell Rickford was a Cornell University professor. He said it was exhilarating to watch the burning alive of babies, the execution of Holocaust survivors, execution style, the mass raping of innocent women. I mean, I don't have words to describe
it. I mean, frankly,
some of what Hamas did on that day makes what the Nazis did. I choose my words carefully here, but frankly, it's even more barbaric than what the Nazis did. I mean, that is really not an exaggeration, I think. So it's horrific, but what I think the listeners have to understand is that here, the Jewish people and the Jewish state are just the canary in the coal mine for this broader civilizational clash that I'm talking about here. So, you know, just as the great haters of Western civilization, so Karl Marx is a good example. Karl Marx sought to upend the biblical inheritance. He sought to upend free markets and capitalism and all that. And he ultimately first went for the Jews. He was viciously anti-Semitic, but his end goal was not the Jews. His end goal was to take down Christendom itself. That is what he wanted. So this really is only partially about the Jews. The same people that are saying horrific, vile, anti-Semitic stuff, they want to see America destroyed too. They're increasingly out in the open about that, by the way. The Students for Justice in Palestine chapters on America's campuses, they're increasingly openly clamoring for the end of America and the end of Western civilization. The Columbia University chapter had their Instagram page banned for saying exactly that about a month ago. So they're letting the cat out of the bag sometimes, and that is something of a silver lining, perhaps, which is nice at a time of just immense frustration like this.
All right, Josh Hammer, 4 weeks from tomorrow is the election in this country. Let's gather some thoughts. Where do you think we are right now?
I think it's Trump's to lose. I still think that. And now it's close. The polling is very close, and we all know that it's close. I continue to think that pollsters have not fixed a lot of their structural and methodological flaws from 2016 and 2020, especially when it comes to senior citizens, elderly voters in particular. My friend Ryan Gerdusky has done some outstanding crosstab analysis on this at his Substack, if you go ahead and check out his work there. And I think that's going to come down to Pennsylvania, Mark. I've said this for a while, but Pennsylvania really is the number one battleground state this cycle. It's very difficult to see either of the two candidates win this election without winning Pennsylvania. Yeah. It's one of the reasons why Kamala Harris made such a foolhardy decision in my book by choosing Tim Walz over the very popular governor, Josh Shapiro. But right now, real clear politics has Pennsylvania as a true toss-up. When you take into account the fact that these elections usually have swing voters that ultimately cast a ballot in opposition to the incumbent party and in favor of the opposition party, all that militates in favor of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. So I remain cautiously bullish on their behalf, but it ultimately, of course, is too close to call.
You know, and I don't know if this is a good thing or not, because I'm going to tell you that I get these things wrong all the time. I was not very bullish. You go back to the end of August, and, you know, some of this is just the way that the news cycle kind of sucks you in and out, and you had all the excitement in the aftermath of the, you know, convention, et cetera. But I'm feeling more bullish than I have for a while. And I agree with you about Pennsylvania. But I guess for me, a lot of it comes down to the fact that if it's a change election, and I think to a certain extent people are, they don't like the way things have been going. They don't like the prices they paid, et cetera. I think that favors Trump. And I know that there's a lot of people that hate him, and maybe those people stay home. Maybe they don't vote for either of these candidates. But I think these next 4 weeks are going to be interesting, Josh, and we'll guide people through them. We'll have you back before the election. But thank you so much for jumping on here this afternoon. Of course, you can hear his show every Saturday, The Josh Hammer Show, on 97.1 FM Talk at 1 p.m. Thank you, Josh. Have a great week.
You too, Mark. Always a pleasure. It's better
over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I have an audio cut of the day. Ilya Shapiro is going to join me in just a moment as well. But I want to mention something for the show tomorrow because I have a parent that is scheduled from the Kirkwood School District. And I got to go back a little bit here. This is to the end of August when school had not started yet. It is it pronounced? I can't remember. So is it Nifer or Nifer Middle School? Nifer Middle School, mm-hmm. Right? There was a parents' night, and Jason Kipp is a social studies teacher there. And in his room, he had a pro-terrorism flag, if you will. He had a Hamas flag, a Palestinian flag that was in his classroom. And there was a parent that approached him afterwards, Alana Austin is her name, that said, and she didn't even say, hey, take that down.
No, she was very nice.
You know, maybe you should have an Israeli flag as well, because both flags reflect our family's support for a two-state solution and would avoid disruption for Jewish students. He crossed his arms and he said no. And then she goes on to say, look, me and my daughter are descendants of a Holocaust survivor, and I hope you would reconsider. And this is where it gets interesting. He says to her, that's your version of history. Ugh. And she says, are you calling the Holocaust my version of history? And his response was, you don't understand both sides of history. We need to continue this conversation with the principal. And this goes, you know, into, you know, a process, if you will. And I'll be honest with you, and Sue, you might remember this. I was all over this story.
Oh, yeah.
You had very little local media coverage. There was, I think, one TV station that did something about it. The Post refused to cover it, which was amazing. I was trying to get it some national coverage at the time, and I think I would have been successful, but then it sort of just got dark and quiet. And I think one of the reasons was the parents were in the process of going through a more formal situation,
sure,
with, you know, raising complaints, et cetera. This parent, I'm told, Alana reached out to me over the weekend and said, okay, I can talk now. Now,
oh,
the lawyers got involved in all this stuff. I don't even know what the update would be on Mr. Kipp. I did hear that he had a coaching position at Eureka that was maybe not something that has continued into the fall, but we'll find out much more tomorrow on the show, because I thought that was an important situation and a case that should have been, you know, exposed. So hopefully we'll have a chance to do that tomorrow. Also on the show tomorrow, your friend Steve Jervey. He's going to become a regular fixture. Steve used to work here in St. Louis. He's a retired meteorologist. We got another hurricane, right?
Another one. And this one is Milton. And for a while they were showing it as a Cat 5, but hopefully it will die down. But you know that stuff changes by the minute.
Well, and this one in particular, look, he was not in the path last week, but now he's in the path because he's in the Tampa area. And this is a Category 5 right now. That doesn't mean it's going to make landfall as a Category 5, but wow, they are definitely getting hammered. So we'll have Steve on the show tomorrow, and then Fred told me one other thing. Oh, this is good. Billboard Chris, Chris Elston, who is from Canada, he has gone on this mission. Chris has been on the show for 5 years now. He's gone on this mission to stop what he calls the biggest child abuse scandal ever, and that's all this gender-affirming care nonsense. He went before, 2 weeks ago, the United Nations and gave a speech.
Holy cow.
Chris has traveled all over the world. And I saw some of his clips from the UN. We've been trying to get him on since then. He's a very busy guy, but he's going to join us tomorrow afternoon as well.
Nice.
Right now, as I mentioned, I may not even close the loop on my first Monday in October, but it's the first Monday in October, which is the new Supreme Court you know, session, which starts today. Our friend Ilya Shapiro is back with us, the director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute. Ilya, welcome back. How are you?
I'm okay. It's you know, a bit of a somber day, yes. the anniversary of the Hamas attack.
Well, let me start with that. Your thoughts. We have spoken and you have written and spoken very passionately since this day a year ago and personally as well. So thoughts on this horrific anniversary?
Well, it's not closure. It's not some historic thing. It's still going on. It meaning the war on multiple fronts, Israel defending not just itself, not just Jews, but Western civilization effectively. The rise of anti-Semitism in America, our campuses in turmoil. So that day really kind of changed our worlds in many ways that are still ongoing. So this is certainly a year to reflect, but it's by no means something that's in the past.
You know, and I just had my friend Josh Hammer on, and we talked about this extensively. And one of the things, maybe, I don't know, I'll ask you, because as a non-Jew, it was really, and it became very clear very quickly how much anti-Semitism there was, especially on college campuses. But that was probably even shocking to you as a Jew, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we in America had gotten used to just, Jewish people are just part of the wonderful mosaic of the entire society. And anti-Semitism, yeah, there's some, you know, yahoos on both the left and the right, but we really don't have to deal with it, but now we do.
So it's the first Monday in October. That's when the Supreme Court gets rolling. I saw one account, you know, reporting, maybe it was the Washington Post. They said, look, last year at this time, they weren't talking about presidential immunity or the Colorado ballot issues. So those were added to the docket, you know, as the year went along. But what are we looking at right now? Is this an average type caseload for the Supreme Court, or would you call it otherwise?
Well, there apparently are about 40 cases on the docket now. They just added a bunch from over the summer, just a few days ago. But no real blockbusters. I mean, this is not, we got used to almost every year having something really huge, affirmative action, abortion, guns, I mean, the same-sex marriage, you name it, the presidential immunity, what have you. We may still, you know, when we're talking about this in June, July, after the term, it may still turn out to be a blockbuster term. Who knows? After the election, there might be another Bush v. Gore type scenario at the court. And who knows what else might come down. But of the cases that are currently on the docket, probably only a couple of them are ones that we're still going to be talking about at the end of the term. One of them, well, maybe two or three. One of them is being argued tomorrow about the regulation of so-called ghost guns. That is these parts kits from which you can machine together a firearm. They don't have serial numbers. That's why they're called ghost guns. Kind of a rerun of last term's case involving bump stocks.
So is there going, one of the cases that we're kind of, you know, keeping an eye on here in St. Louis is the transgender issues that have gone before the court. We've had some Missouri cases that have been, you know, highlighted with our Attorney General Andrew Bailey. We had the WashU whistleblower here, Jamie Reed, in St. Louis. Are they going to take a case on that's with the gender-affirming care stuff?
That's probably the biggest case on the docket right now. It's a case called United States versus Scrimeti, Scrimeti being the Attorney General of Tennessee, defending that state's law banning gender care for minors, surgical interventions, hormone injections, all of those sorts of things. It's a constitutional case. They only took the equal protection argument, that is denying this general gender care to minors a violation of equal protection. Presumably the court took this up because there's litigation on this all over the place and they want to set out some standards, but that's generating a lot of briefing, which is ongoing right now. And they haven't set an argument date, but it'll be later this fall.
Are there, this might seem like a weird question, but let me ask it anyway. We're talking a lot about Roe v. Wade and abortion. We know we had the big case from a couple summers ago. Are there still statewide abortion issues that are coming before the court or not?
Well, it's funny you ask. Just today, they turned back an appeal of a Texas law regarding emergency provision of abortion and how state law intersects with EMTALA, the federal law that requires hospitals that take federal funds to accept patients and stabilize them. There was a case out of Idaho on some related issues last term that the court ultimately did not decide, just send it back to the lower courts. So nothing else on abortion is currently before the court.
Do you have any anticipation? Obviously, this is up to the individual justices, but we have Clarence Thomas, 76 years old. He's been on the court since he was 43. Sam Alito is 74 right now, and then Sonia Sotomayor is 70. So, look, you can be a very young 76. I'm not trying to boot Clarence Thomas out of the court, but, you know, you these paths for the rest of their lives sometimes become a little bit more clear after an election. Do you have any thoughts on that, possible retirements?
I think if Trump wins, I think it's very likely that both Thomas and Alito will retire in the next 4 years. If he doesn't, if Harris wins, then obviously they're not going to leave voluntarily.
Right. And would you, I mean, the other liberal justices are too young for that even to be an issue right now, likely, right?
Well, yeah, so Sotomayor, you said, is 70. You know, she has diabetes that she's been living with her entire life. You know, would she want to, you know, she's been on the court 14 going on 15 years. Is that enough? Will she, it also depends who controls the Senate, of course, because even if Harris wins and the Republicans keep the Senate, you know, who knows what the, you know, we haven't had a Supreme Court confirmation in a period of divided government since Clarence Thomas. The last time there was even a nominee was Merrick Garland in 2016. And of course he didn't even get a vote. That was the decision made by the Senate majority at the time. So depending on how the election plays out, certainly we could either definitely expect retirements or definitely not expect them.
Here's what I'd say. Thank God Merrick Garland wasn't confirmed. Looking at that guy when he does the job he's supposed to be doing right now, I can't even imagine that scenario. Thoughts as we get closer? I mentioned this to my previous guest as well. Look, 4 weeks from tomorrow, you mentioned the election, the implications. What's the gut check from Ilya Shapiro?
I'm just a simple constitutional lawyer. Look, I'm reading all the same stuff that everyone else is, and it's all within the margin of error. Who knows how good the pollsters are this time around? I think it's going to come down to the ground game, like the unsexy blocking and tackling, getting out the vote, and things like that. It's not about persuading people. I mean, they're very very narrow band of people who are true independents. It's more about making sure that people that that support you or hate the other person enough actually make it to the polls.
Did you see, you know, one of the things that's been happening, I don't know if you sit around like I do because I like to watch football a lot, but, you know, there's been all kinds of Kamala national ads that have been running, and a lot of us are like, wait a second, where's the Trump stuff? But there was a good PAC ad yesterday that sort of highlighted the economy that I think would be very effective, but they're being outspent, you know, by Harris, I think maybe 3-1 in some of these states.
Yeah, who knows how their strategies are actually playing out, because so much of this is done on social media and digitally and other ways. Who are, you know, the Harris campaign has a lot of money, so it's burning up a lot of money, kind of throwing up a lot of these national ads, which aren't as targeted, perhaps. You know, money's not the end of the ballgame. Basically, what apparently, once you get past a certain threshold, and nobody knows what that is in any given election, beyond that, it's you know, advertising doesn't do much. I think both campaigns, as I said, we better press to invest in getting out the vote and those just basic mechanics. But then what do I know? Again,
I think you're right about that. I think that's the ground game is very important and not to be underestimated. Ilya, thank you so much. Enjoy the start of the new term. Have a great week and we'll talk soon.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Wrapping up a Monday edition, very interesting exchange early this afternoon in the briefing room with KJP and Ducey. So let's do that.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Questions over the weekend about the amount of money that's available for FEMA when it comes to hurricane relief. Now we got another one coming, and there's questions about North Carolina and whether people are getting the money that they should from the federal government. In the meantime, they're shipping a bunch of money overseas. So Peter Ducey asking KJP.
The administration has money to send to Lebanon without Congress coming back. But Congress does have to come back to approve money to send to people in North Carolina. Do I have that right?
Here's what I'm going to be very clear about. The president and the vice president has had a robust whole of government response to this. Hundreds of millions of dollars. I said it at the top, more than $200 million that we have directly put towards survivors here. We have made sure that every state has gotten their storm-requested emergency declaration.
So she goes on and she tries to, you know, explain this, and then he keeps kind of going back and forth, and then eventually this happens.
We have the money available to help survivors of Hurricane Helene and also Hurricane Milton. Now there's going to be a shortfall, right? Because we don't know how bad it's Hurricane Milton is going to be.
Hmm.
And so we're going to need additional funding.
Okay.
We're going to need additional funding.
That's exactly what I just asked about. And you said it was misinformation.
Yes. What you're asking me is why Congress needs to come back and do their job. That's what you're asking me. Congress needs to come back and do their job and provide extra assistance, extra funding to disaster relief fund. That's what Congress needs to do, and we're going to continue to urge that. You may not want that. But that's okay. That's what this president wants, and that's what the vice president wants. Thanks, everybody.
And she walked out. She was kind of mad at Peter. But again,
she was busted.
Yeah, she was busted in a particularly bad mood. By the way, they just kind of promoted her to an advisory role outside of what she's doing in the briefing. Oh, my God. God help us, right? Have a great Monday night. Go Chiefs. Go Royals. I can even say that. We'll talk tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.